This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. North Carolina is taking small steps toward opening up the skies for unmanned aerial vehicles.
I am tightening the launcher elastics right now. So then we're going to check and make sure everything's free and clear. Okay, so what we're going to do is we're pulling the safety pin. This is a Trimble UX-5 unmanned aircraft. Okay.
I'm prepared to take off. Right. One, two, three.
That is Tom Zukowski from NC State's Next Gen Air Transportation Center. Next Generation apparently uses rubber bands and safety pins, but okay, he's launching a drone at one of six approved flight zones. North Carolina transportation officials are preparing for new federal regulations that are expected to open the nation's skies to commercial drones sometime next year. WUNC military reporter Jay Price has been looking into unmanned flight in the state. It's part of his American Homefront project. It's a collaboration of several public radio stations. Jay Price, welcome back. Good to have you here.
Glad to be here. Thanks, Frank.
Okay, so what's North Carolina doing to prepare for these federal changes, federal regulations, I guess?
Well, the DOT is going to be in charge, much as like DMV is in charge of driver's licenses, things like that. DOT is going to be in charge of, to the degree we're going to regulate drones in the state, they're going to be in charge of that. And they're going to issue permits, and they're putting that permit system together as we speak. They had a deadline of July 1st to get a draft in of the test. The test won't actually look like a driver's license test. It won't be the same sort of thing. It'll be it won't test your ability to actually fly the things. It will test your ability to understand the laws. It will test your knowledge of the laws that govern your behavior when you're flying one.
And is sort of to bring North Carolina in compliance with federal regulations? Will there be a direct overlay? I mean, how much latitude does the state have? Can the state not do this at all? Where's the connection between the federal and the state in this?
Well, the state just wanted to have more control over who was flying and how they were flying and who was being in compliance with the law. And, you know, I asked them who was going to enforce this. You know, you can see, you know, it would not be a popular thing for DOT to install a whole new cadre of enforcement officers. And, you know, I think in the beginning it will mainly be in the breach. If you do something wrong, they will track you down and figure out, you know, how to come into play, how that comes into play and yank your permit. But mainly if you break one of the laws, it's going to be a fairly typical law. It might be an existing law. One of their new steps is to hire a DOT program officer for drones, and that's Chris Gibson. And Chris, when I talked to him, wisely pointed out that just because you're flying a drone doesn't mean you're not subject to existing laws. And the one he cited was Peeping Tom law. Just because you're looking in your neighbor's window with a drone doesn't mean it's legal all of a sudden. So the people who enforce that law, your local police department, sheriff's department, whoever, would be the ones making the arrest, prosecuting, et cetera. And, you know, that set of laws is going to look like anything else. But the other the state's part of this is just permits. And it's going to be pretty straightforward and simple. You have to be over 17 or 17 and older, have a driver's license, and you have to know your stuff. There's going to be a study guide online. The test will be online. And, you know, so they're taking these kind of baby steps to get ready for the FAA's new regulations that they're supposed to or expected to pop out within the next year, and those will govern smaller drones, things from, you know, under 55 pounds. And eventually the FAA will kind of work its way up to, who knows, large commercial aircraft.
Yeah, I mean, drone is any sort of pilotless vehicle. And I suppose, does that apply to terrestrial vehicles as well? Or when we say drone, are we always talking about a pilotless airborne vehicle?
Well, in this case, we're talking about just aircraft. And, you know, as far as the size of the things, I did a story a few years back in Afghanistan on the Marines who were flying a set of drones. And you think, you know, you heard that thing just buzzing into the sky a few minutes ago on your tape. That wasn't the most foreboding of noises, right? Most of these things are pretty small. That one looks like a model aircraft. It is a model airplane. It's got foam wings, for God's sake. But I did a story on these Marine drones that they were using in the south of Afghanistan to fly freight around. It was supposed to be an experiment. They were two helicopters. They were full-size helicopters normally used for timber. You'd cut a tree on the side of a mountain. The helicopter would bring it down. They'd fly dozens of trees down, well, one at a time, all day long, very robust. The company that the Marines had brought in for the experiment was using these things to fly freight around. They were just basically flying water and food around. I mean, who wants to be the last Marine to die on the roads of Afghanistan delivering water, right? So it was a very practical thing. And by that point, they'd flown 3 million pounds of freight. And to some degree, I mean, these things were kind of stupid. They were brainless. They were flying them with an Xbox, and most of the computer gear was back at base. There weren't any sophisticated sensors to sense other aircraft around them. The airspace over Afghanistan is fairly clear, except for a few things. So a much more complicated situation here, but I think that's generally where we're headed, is bigger stuff eventually. But for now, pretty small stuff.
Well, let's talk about what's happening right now. The state of North Carolina, who can currently fly drones in this state?
Very few organizations. I mean, recreational users can fly them pretty much at will with the normal restrictions that apply to model aircraft is kind of the way the FAA considers them. They're just model airplanes. You have to stay under 400 feet. You have to stay X number of miles away from airports, and they have to be within your line of sight. You can do that now. People are flying drones probably as we speak. Fairly modest little things. For commercial and government operations, though, you need waivers. You need waivers from the state or you need FAA waivers, and very few organizations have taken the step to do that.
Well, let's talk about Tom Zukowski, who we just heard winding the elastic on his drone. What's Tom doing? Where is he, and what kind of research are they doing?
Tom is working with an organization called Next Generation Air Transportation Center. I guess one way to look at them is they're an academic center. They're based at NC State University at the Centennial Campus. They work with the FAA. They work with the state. They work with companies like Precision Hawk, a small private drone maker based in Raleigh. To try to get everyone up to speed. You know, they're one of a consortium of university centers gathering data for the FAA on how best to use these things so the FAA can kind of hone its regulations. And they have several sites, as the opening said, they have several sites that are permitted, especially permitted by the FAA around North Carolina, and they fly these things almost daily. Again, fairly innocuous.
It's interesting to think about this. You've got the Transportation Department making way for the regulations, trying to figure out how that's going to go. At the same time, you've got research into what regulations and how those regulations should look, so you can see the dynamic involved. And you mentioned one of the companies that's involved in sort of providing the material for places like NextGen, the center, to test, Precision Hawk. And you talked with Thomas Hahn, who is it's a Raleigh-based company. Here's what he said in terms of what they're trying to do.
The whole goal of our company is to create insights from the information that can be collected by these UAVs. We primarily focus on agriculture, insurance, and energy. Those insights range from change detection to anomaly identification, but really are trying to give folks answers. Those answers could be, tell me where my crop is healthy and where my crop is not healthy. Tell me where I have drought in my field and where I have a surplus of water in my field.
So, and you visited Precision Hawk's offices. Are they building UAVs there? What do they do exactly?
They build UAVs, but they build them in Canada. And, you know, the actual hardware is almost beside the point with these small drones. They're very robust, simple aircraft. Their first model, the fuselage, was actually made of circuit boards, you know, computer circuit boards. Not necessarily because they were running information through the fuselage, but just because they were handy, and these are computer guys, basically. But the headquarters is in Raleigh. Their parking lot, frankly, was overflowing, and I asked him, you know, what's going on with that? And he said, well, you know, we jumped from about 25 employees this time last year to about 80 now, and we're about to move. They've outgrown their headquarters, they look and feel like a typical tech startup, and they are.
And they're doing the analysis work. I mean, it's more like this. They're on the software end, right? Because, I mean, the technology for getting these things up and flying them is pretty well known. But then the question is, once you get the data, how do you analyze it? How do you write software for the particular applications?
Yeah, and it's complicated stuff. I mean, they have really sophisticated cameras on theirs. I think they can see down to less than 1 centimeter from the altitudes they're flying right over the fields. And they're looking for things like pests. They have other sensors, too, on the aircraft. They have these modules you can plug and unplug with different sensors. But the aircraft just fly themselves. They fling them into the air just like you're throwing a paper airplane. And they just automatically follow the program over the field that you've laid out ahead of time by GPS coordinates. They go back and forth. There's no direction given to the aircraft. It gathers the information. They come back in, and I guess you can do it with Bluetooth or USB. You download the data. And then the question comes to be, okay, what data are you getting out of this, and what can you do with it? And frankly, the bulk of what the industry, the drone industry, is seeing as the future of drones in this country, the impact is going to be on agriculture. They're saying, you know, 82 billion plus is the impact potentially nationally, and probably 70-80% of that is going to be in agriculture because they can help you grow your crops better. They can help you reduce the amount of seed, herbicide, pesticide you're putting into the fields and see what's going wrong and catch it, you know, with some sort of pest or drought or whatever ahead of time and really boost your crops, in some cases by double digits.
Jay Price is military reporter for WUNC and the American Homefront Project. We're talking about drones today. Jay is going to stay with us for this conversation that will continue with author William Arkin on the military applications for drones. And that happens just ahead on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Please stay tuned.